Now, there's been widespread coverage this week about the story of Princess Haya bint Al Hussein, one of the wives of the ruler of Dubai, Sheikh Mohammed Al Maktoum. You may remember I spoke to Princess Haya back in January when our former president, Mary Robinson, visited her in Dubai following international concern over the welfare of Princess Sheikha Latifa. Now Princess Haya is herself in the news because she has left her husband, a highly unusual move for a senior royal in the UAE, and it's written up all along that she's hiding. Well, she's hiding apparently in a house that she bought. She paid $85 million for it. So maybe she's staying in there in protection, if you know what I mean, in a townhouse in central London. Well, I'm joined now on the line by Radha Starling, who's founder and CEO of an organisation called Detained in Dubai. First of all, you're very welcome to the programme, Radha Starling. What do you do and how did the organisation come about and why?
The organisation I founded around 11 years ago when a friend and colleague of mine was detained in the UAE. He was facing injustices and unfair trials and wrongful conviction. And after his release, that became quite prominent in the media, a lot of people continued to contact me. And I realized that his case wasn't isolated and just sort of naturally started this organization.
And can you remind listeners of the story, kind of the more recent story, starting with Latifa, but also her sister?
Yes. Her sister, Sheikha Shamsa, was allegedly kidnapped by Sheikh Mohammed's people from the streets of Cambridge. And there is an ongoing investigation into that case through the Cambridge police. Then after that, Latifa, her younger sister, had tried to escape after she witnessed alleged abuse that her sister had suffered, such as forced medication and various other ill treatment.
She made a film about it.
Yes. Latifa had tried to escape previously and she was caught and then she was imprisoned and tortured as per her video testimony. And her most recent escape led to her capture from a yacht, a US flagged yacht in international waters in a military operation, which led to her being brought back to Dubai.
Now, she was on the phone to you, as I understand it, from that yacht, when they were boarded by a military-type force.
That's right. She telephoned me during the attack and said that she heard gunshots outside, that she was frightened, and asked me to please help. Then all communications with all people on board the yacht were terminated, and I didn't hear from them until their later release. Unfortunately, we haven't heard from Latifa since then, except in the visit that Mary Robson attended in December at the request of Princess Haya. Obviously, that was also widely publicised, and she was criticised for having circumvented normal United Nations protocols because the UAE had not replied to UN requests to visit Latifa. And instead, Princess Haya then asked Mary Robinson to come instead, and she said that she was in the safe and loving care of her family. Now, the world didn't really believe that. And now that we've seen Princess Haya coming out and saying, essentially, that she was seeking asylum, that she's fearful for her life, and now she's being taken to court by Sheikh Mohammed in the UK for the return of her children to Dubai. So she will, obviously, during that court case, have to provide testimony as to the ill treatment of Latifa if she's to prevent the children being sent back to Dubai.
Okay. Princess Haya, as I say, spoke in January last on the programme and she referred to the situation with Princess Latifa as a deeply private matter. We can listen now to her explaining that. And as far as she's concerned, there was at that point anyway, no truth behind the concerns being raised about Latifa.
If I thought for a single second that any shred of this was true, I wouldn't put up with it or stand for it. You might not know, but my mother died when I was three in a helicopter accident. And I live every single day needing to know that if anything ever happened to me, that my children would be loved and cared for and supported and done right by. And that's unequivocal. Their right to freedom, their right to safety, their right to everything else they deserve as human beings is something that if I thought for a single millisecond was not the case, I wouldn't be here and I wouldn't stand for it.
That sounds like a ring of great sincerity, would you think?
I would think so, but given that she is in the position of being required probably to give that sort of testimony, and now with her subsequent actions and reports in the media saying that following that interview, she investigated further into the case of Latifa and discovered things that that she obviously didn't like. She perhaps discovered the abuse, discovered that she was being imprisoned. And you have to remember that Princess Haya apparently hadn't seen Latifa since that attack, except for that single day, and didn't see her after that one visitation.
You know, Mary Robinson, our former president, has a very distinguished record as a lawyer. And a human rights lawyer, and that's been her area of expertise, or commitment, I suppose, is what I should say, particularly since she left the presidency. But you're very cross with her about this.
Well, given that it circumvented usual UN protocols where they would send a team of people who were trained to see whether Latifa was under duress during that meeting, and Mary had a meeting with Latifa for several hours only, or two or three hours perhaps, and then came out with a report saying that she's absolutely fine. And clearly, from Latifa's testimony, she's never been fine in the custody of her family.
Fergus Findlay, you know Mary Robinson very well. You were part of her election campaigning going way back. Wasn't it odd that she would give, as it were, a diagnosis?
Well, it seems very odd on the face of it because she's not a psychiatric expert or a health expert. But I think any of us who've ever worked with Mary Robinson wouldn't question her integrity for a second, wouldn't question her commitment to human rights for a second. I mean, I don't understand this story. It seems incredibly complex and arcane and, you know, all sorts of peculiar elements of divorce and acrimony and so on are tied up in it as well. And obviously huge amounts of money at play. And it may be that Mary Robinson made an error of judgment in being dragged into the middle of it. I'd be amazed if anyone would question her good faith in the matter, though.
Mary, what do you think?
It's like a children's fairy tale. I mean, maybe the wicked stepmother isn't there, but all the other ingredients are there. There's princesses, there's sheikhs, there's boats at sea. It's very hard to get your head around this, but insofar as our former president, Mary Robinson, was involved, perhaps she would, well, almost certainly she was mistaken to get involved in such a public way and make an assertion on matters of somebody's mental health or otherwise. But I don't doubt her, very much like Fergal, I would not doubt her goodwill. But it's just an extraordinary story. I can't relate it to anything.
Right. And since, in her own statement last December, Mary Robinson said, since her return from Dubai, I've written a report of my visit to Michelle Bachelet, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. I believe future action rests with that office, with the UN Committee on Enforced Disappearances, and with the Special Rapporteur on Extrajudicial Summary or Arbitrary Executions. She says that she undertook the visit and made an assessment, not a judgment. Would you go along with that or no, Arada, and just say she should not have done it?
The issue is that in having done that, Latifa's case could potentially have been closed as far as the investigation is concerned. And if the UAE, under such public scrutiny, with such disbelief over Mary Robinson's report, should then cooperate with the further requests that the UN has made to them for visitation to Latifa, and they simply haven't responded, not even to a request for proof of life.
Well, I think what you were saying about the upcoming court case. Now, it's all kind of alarming because you read that they've hired protection, that they've looked for protection from the police, who say they don't talk about individual cases. And, like, there are suggestions that her own life now, Princess Haya, could be at risk. But
yes.
Are we not getting into, like, the realms of the unbelievable to think that could happen?
No, I really don't think we are. What we're seeing is an increased belligerent behaviour coming from the Gulf region. We're seeing Saudi able to kill Khashoggi in an embassy in Turkey. We're seeing an attack on an international yacht. We're seeing previously his two children have been seized from outside of the UAE jurisdiction. And I would say that Princess Haya is at extreme risk, and also obviously his children. He has a history of unlawfully, extrajudicially returning his children back to the UAE. So I can understand why they would be on complete lockdown with extreme security.
Right. And of course, there's also the question of the rules and regulations in the British jurisdiction would be somewhat different to that in the UAE. But I got the impression when I was speaking to her and her, well, I wasn't speaking to her people, but researchers were and producers, there was huge emphasis on the fact that she is the daughter of the King of Jordan. And I thought it was interesting that that emphasis was laid. And does that make her less vulnerable than the other wives if they step out of line?
Potentially, that does afford her some sort of protection. And obviously, Jordan is trying to step back and would definitely not want her to return to that country, which is why the United Kingdom is actually a very safe choice for her. Obviously, the ramifications of trade agreements and all sorts of agreements between those countries are being negotiated behind the scenes. And the UAE will definitely be trying to work with Jordan to convince them, to convince Princess Haya to cooperate. But if she went back to Dubai, her former husband, or about to be former husband, he owns the courts, he rules the courts, and there is no separation of state and judiciary. So she wouldn't stand a chance at winning any kind of custody back there. And she stands the risk that those children are also going to be locked up under house arrest or imprisoned simply to keep them away from her, just like in the case of Latifa.
Right. I mean, it is like the golden cage, isn't it? Like you can be behind walls or behind windows, but if you don't have freedom, it's and we don't know. I mean, how much do you know, for example, about who is the mother of those two daughters and where does she fit into all this jigsaw puzzle?
Yes, exactly. I mean, he's allegedly got six wives, but there's also reports that he has, in fact, more. There's official reports that he has 23 children, where we know that he has 31 or more. Princess Haya was his most public wife. She attended all of the events with him.
Yeah.
So it was actually very surprising that she's now fled, essentially, and fled with the children in quite a dramatic political way. So the other wives, they've been just pretty much hidden away and no one knows anything about them. They don't attend the events with him. But certainly Princess Haya has been quite his advocate for a number of years.
Yes,
but
and talked about the loving family there, and clearly talked about the loving family to Mary Robinson. But you kind of wonder what goes on behind those walls. Does one bit of a family know what the other bit of a family is doing? Amy, what do you make of it?
Well, Princess Haya spent quite a lot of time here in the early 90s. She trained here under Paul Dara, the show jumper. She was quite an accomplished equestrian.
That's right. And she stayed with the Mount Charles.
And she represented Jordan in 2000 Olympics. And she would have been, a very well-known figure in show jumping circles here when she was here. But I think that the difference here, and Latifah is technically her stepdaughter, is that, you know what I mean? She was kind of, I suppose they said she was vulnerable and that she needed protection, and that they were slightly able to kind of bury that story. The Mary Robinson element certainly raised it higher profile than it possibly would have if Mary Robinson hadn't gone out there. But Princess Haya is well known internationally. She's a global figure. And, you know, she has an opportunity here, I suppose, you know what I mean, to lift the lid on what's after happening. And it depends on, there's various stories across the paper over the week about why she's fled, you know, and I'm not going to comment on which ones are true or false, yes. But because we don't know, but you know what I mean, and then with her husband posting on Instagram, and you know what I mean,
about the husband's post.
So he's writing poetry, and the translation, basically the one that stood out for me is identifying an unidentified woman, I don't care if you live or die. So I think that, you know what I mean, to post something like that on a social media account when his wife has just fled to London would make you think. And
it's,
I suppose,
bizarre.
To
the, yeah. And you mentioned treason, Ken.
That's right, yes. The actual wording, it's in the Sunday Times piece here today, and it says, I'm quoting, Haya's role in the saga remains murky. In a poem posted on Instagram, Maktoum accused an unidentified woman of, quotes, treachery and betrayal, warned that, quotes, the era of your lies has ended, and concluded, I don't care if you live or die. This isn't a poem. Anyway, all I can say is, having known very little about this story until we began to, it is becoming more and more fascinating.
It really is. And it raises other issues, you know, about blind eyes and money and all of that. Like, if you take that Donald Trump's first trip was to Saudi, where he was thrilled with himself because he had done this deal, where women are perpetually infantilized, you know, and I mean, a car is not a really big deal, but we allow 17, 18-year-olds to do that, and they are allowed to walk on their own in a park with their kids, and we just go with it and like to do business with them. And we do business with them too, don't we?
A couple of months ago, one of our previous reporters for Irish Country Living, Yvonne Kerr, is actually living in the Emirates now, and she wrote a story for us. But you know what I mean? It was about her life, which is quite nice, as an expat. But she wrote a box text about the dark side of Dubai, and that was really the piece that you know was of most interest to our readers. And in it, she said that of the 9.4 million inhabitants that make up the Arab Peninsula, 70% are low-paid migrant labourers from countries such as India, Indonesia, and Philippines. And they technically have no rights at all. They're unskilled foreign workers, and they must have a sponsor. She said she was lucky; she was sponsored by her husband, who was a New Zealander, and that her life was quite pleasant. But you know what I mean? It's not just women in these countries. There is a fundamental differences between lives here and lives there.
There's huge issues of women's rights and workers' rights in that part of the world. Yeah. We're all going to take part in a World Cup soon, which seems to have been built on the back of slave labour, incredible exploitation
and many
of
deaths.
Slave labour, and many, many, many deaths. And you know, the treatment of women, we know about. I'm really struggling to figure out how this story fits in. And it may be my own stupidity. It feels very much like I'm being asked to comment on the third series of Dallas, never having watched the first two series. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an incredibly complicated story of divorce and money and bitterness and so on. But is it more than that? Is it really more than that in this particular case? Or should we be concentrating on the point you were making a minute ago about how women are treated generally, and about how migrant workers are treated.
Radha, certainly we've seen a lot of women trying to escape the Gulf region from the Emirates. Recently, we had Hind El Baluki, who sought asylum in Germany. We've had Rahaf Mohammed, who was obviously a very public case again, and she went to Canada. And I'm getting more and more phone calls all the time from women who are in abusive situations, are unable to get legal support for that. So we have a huge problem, and yet we've got these countries, especially Dubai, marketing that women have all of the freedoms, all of the rights. They have women on boards of companies and so on. But that's just a very small layer of the problems there. We have also women making reports that they've been raped and then being charged with having sex outside marriage and jailed for it. So there is absolutely a prejudice against women in the Middle East.
One of the things about the same Sheikh Maktoum, Emir, might go to you on this. Like, he has extensive involvements in Ireland, and everybody's heard of Godolphin, and you see photographs of him with the Queen, and in parts of Kildare they will sing his praises because of employment, good employers and all of that. How do you think that'll go down here?
Well, he does have considerable investments here, and his breeding operations would be worldwide renowned, and he's won a lot of races here. His wife would have accompanied him to a lot of those, but she's friendly with the Irish, I suppose, in her own right, to him. You know what I mean? She was here in her own right, show jumping in a separate industry, and show jumping in a separate industry to the horse racing industry. You know what I mean? It will depend on how this all plays out in the courts, and it's going to be much more public because there's two children involved as well. The fact that she took the two kids to London with her, and that he's going to want to have those back, I think that the, you know, public perception will be guided by that.
Well, that's very traditional. You hear about that all over the place. That in some Muslim societies, the children stay with the man's family, not necessarily when they're very young, but certainly when they get to a certain age, they go back to their dad. Used to be that you only got custody if you were a woman here. I mean, these things...
Different,
yeah. God, I was going to say horses, but I won't. But I have met a number of people who knew her when she was here, because she was here for quite a while. A range of people. And they were very impressed with her. She wasn't kind of looking to be treated like a princess every hour of the day, and she got stuck in and she worked very hard and, you know, improved her own skills, and then she ended up chairing one of the international equestrian federations, and I'm advised that she beat it into shape, you know, that it was all over the place. Hardener, you're now wearing your diplomatic hat. How do you interpret what's happening here? I mean, clearly, listening to our guest, Radha Stirling, they're going to keep pursuing this. We're going to see coverage of the... There'll be widespread coverage of the court case, should it happen. Is it embarrassing for us? We do business, all of that?
It's about as embarrassing as it is for everybody else who does business, which is to say not very embarrassing at all. I think there are a few things here. I mean, this clearly will all play out. It's going to be a difficult divorce. There's a lot of money at stake. There are children at stake. Maybe some good will come out of that, in that maybe it will shed some light on what exactly has been going on in the family. There's a bigger issue about the UAE and about the Emirates. They have been very active, as have other countries in the region, in the regional tensions that have been going on. And now the region is extending into North Africa, and the UAE backs one group in Libya, and the Saudis back another group. And it is a very complicated political situation that maybe we should be paying more attention to rather than the goings-on of the royal family. Should we be doing business with them? Well, if we stop doing business with people who have question marks over, we won't be doing a lot of business. And that's a choice we can make. But for the moment, there are no sanctions on the UAE. Right. There is considerable UAE investment in Ireland, and there are a lot of Irish people working in the Gulf. And a lot of those people went there during our own recession, when our construction industry was going down the tubes, and that's where they got work. And right. We should remember that too.
Okay. Okay, we'll leave that there for the moment. I'll just go back to you briefly, if I may, Radha. How do you see the next bit of this unfolding?
Well, I think it was quite the mistake of Sheikh Mohammed to actually take this matter to court and not try to resolve it more diplomatically between them. In the UK, we've refused, all UK courts, Scotland and England, have refused all extraditions to the UAE. And that's pretty much Europe-wide as well. Because of the real risk of unfair trials, of human rights violations and even torture, the UAE hasn't taken any steps to improve the human rights situation there to allow us to extradite people, despite the fact that we have a treaty. And those same rules are going to be applied in the court case. If it can be proved that these children would potentially face risk if returned to the UAE, they won't be returned. And during these proceedings, obviously, There's the opportunity for Princess Haya to call on Sheikha Latifa to testify in her case, which could then shed further light on Latifa's plight. And then we have other children who of Sheikh Mohammed who are on even more lockdown and security following Latifa's attempted escape. So all of these issues, I think, are going to be brought to the public light. He's been the ambassador for Dubai for a long time, and he's been very popular, promoted the country, and he was actually quite liked. But recently, he's made so many errors of judgment and so many blatant acts of disregard for international law that he's seriously damaging the image of the country, and that could even lead to him having to hand over power to his son. Abu Dhabi, who's the powerhouse in the UAE, is not going to be very pleased at all with these acts that are essentially only coming from Sheikh Mohammed and causing such damage to the country as a whole.
Right. One last question. In this jurisdiction, family law is held in camera. Is it the same in Britain?
I believe that these court proceedings will be quite private, so there will be a lot of information available and a lot of information will certainly be leaked, but overall the proceedings will be kept private.
Okay, we will watch with interest. And Radha Sterling of Detained in Dubai, thank you very much indeed for talking to us.